Welcome to episode 1 of the Success Show podcast, where we dive deep into the stories and expertise of extraordinary individuals shaping the landscape of their respective fields. Today's conversation is with Dr. Pradeep Sethi, a distinguished dermatologist and hair transplant expert with over 15,000 surgeries supervised. His progressive work in the direct hair transplant technique and expertise in hairline design and corrective procedures have earned him widespread acclaim, as well as opportunities to work with numerous known figures and celebrities like Mohammad Shami, Ravi Shastri and Boni Kapoor. In this episode, we spoke about a diversity of topics ranging from hair growth, hair regrowth, hair fall, hair transplants, baldness, to even myths and much more. So stay tuned. Before you start watching, please don't forget to like and share this video, as well as subscribe to this channel and the Rohan Matreja Shorts channel. Follow me on Instagram at Rohan.Matreja, as well as at The Success Show Podcast. Once again, you're watching The Success Show Podcast. Enjoy. Hi, Dr. Sethi. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And it took some time, but yes, now
we're... Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you. So I'd love to start talking to you by starting off with what you've achieved and how you've got into this journey. I just want to know, can you tell me a bit more about your journey as such a known hair transplant expert and how you got into it and how the journey has been for you?
So actually, I did my MBBS from Odisha. I was born in Odisha and very humble background. And I was supported by some of the people. They given me scholarship during my MBBS studies, and so with their foundation sponsoring some of the poor but needy students. So I completed my MBBS. Then I got into AIIMS New Delhi in 2005. And I joined in dermatology. I wanted to be a dermatologist because I thought after doing dermatology, I will have a lot of time for my meditations and everything. So it was dermatology comprises study of hair, study of skin, nails, mucosa, and other sexually transmitted diseases also. So it is kind of dermatology, a vast one. There are many subsets of dermatology. I completed in 2008. Along with my wife, Dr. Arika Bansal. So after completing our studies in 2008, I was always drawn by the Himalayas. And somehow there was a job opportunity in Rishikesh, Dehradun. So we were invited there, and once we landed there, somehow that opportunity was not there. And I was determined to be there, in Himalayas, and we started a small practice, an humble practice in Rishikesh. And after 1 year of dermatology practice, so I wanted to do something new that I have never done. And the training in AIIMS is a little bit kind of doing something academically challenging. And so hair was around in 2009-10, and we thought, let us start doing hair. And we, after gathering a lot of information and whatever training possible, we exposed ourselves to that kind of training, and we started doing hair in 2010. Precisely on the first procedure was on 28th of February. And within few months, we realized that we should do only this, nothing else. So there comes the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. I have shared some of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. What he says is, yeah, do small things in extraordinary ways. Be the best one in your line. So that was one. Then also he said that dig your well at one point. Don't try in multiple places. So do one thing at a time. That was his message. So these two lines decided that we should do only hair, nothing else. We should put all our energy only into one thing. So by 2012, we did quit all our rest of our dermatology practices like skin, laser, or other cosmetic practices, and we were doing only hair. So since we were doing only hair, putting all our energy into that, me and Dr. Arika Bansal together, So, you know, and of course, the blessings of Paraman Sivananda was there, and we have been meditating since, you know, I would say I started doing since 2001, 2002.
Oh.
And he says that when you silence your mind, silence your senses, silence your intelligence by scientific yoga practice, then you listen to the voice of God in your spine through the advanced technique of meditations. And then whatever you will hear there, or you will get intuitively, new information will come to you, and they will be much ahead, it will be before the rest of the world would know that. So that, you know, you'll be ahead of the game. So,
yeah.
So intuitively we learned that we should, there is a new technique that came to us called direct hair transplantation, which was kind of, you know, very smart, efficient method of doing, moving the hair from back to front, so that, you know, the outside body time is reduced to from hours to few minutes. And as I said, we are doing only that. And me and Dr. Arika, and these two brains from AIMS doing only one thing, and have no other thing to do. And with the DHT concept, or direct hair transplant concept, so kind of revolutionized our own results. And that was very, very encouraging. And it is, you are growing something. And, you know, a hair transplant is not only a science, but a big art. No two faces on earth are similar. So it is a very customized piece of work by God. So when it is customized, that there is artistry. So you have to master the art also. Science is evolving, and at the same time you have to very, very artistically do it. So that started giving us kind of challenge, given, you know, you are challenging yourself to become better on a daily basis.
Exactly.
So in that way we got drawn and to do only this. And of course when you do something very well, and you know, the word of mouth goes out, it went all over India, started going to all over the world. Back then 2010-12, and there were not many, you know, hair transplant surgeons or clinics all over the world. And wherever there was good work happening, people used to travel from different parts of the world to get the procedure. And we were also getting people from USA, UK, started getting. And in Rishikesh, Dehradun, we realized that in Northern India, we have to be in Delhi. So we came to Delhi in 2013 and 14, and then we started our center here, from where I'm talking to you now. Then we, of course, slowly it was very organic growth of scaling up into Mumbai, Hyderabad, and as of today, we have got close to 250 people working with us, and 10 plus doctors and patients coming from all over the world. Close to 45 to 50% patients are from the Western world, and a lot of NRIs. So, and of course, the thing is, every day we are improving, and that was the main thing. And he says, complacency, never be complacent. When you are praised, don't be complacent. You know, and there is a beautiful word. Yes, he says, when you are praised, don't relax on your laurels. Keep on doing the hard work to become better, better and better. So there is always scope of improvement for everybody, and we are goal as a unit as growing, improving, and the encouragement comes in terms of happiness on the faces of the patients, friends, recognition,
definitely,
endorsements.
Yeah.
And you know, this whole medical science is, I would say, infant science. Not only medical science, the whole science, I would say, very infant. There are a lot of things to happen, and till mankind has not evolved to close to godliness, there is scope of improvement. So also in hair transplant, there is scope of improvement.
I mean, there are so many things you've just said. It's very impressive. I already have so many questions out of these few words that you've said. But I'd like to ask you about this quote that you told me that you strongly believe in. The season of failure is the best time for showing the seeds of success. I wanted to elaborate a bit more about this, because you've been talking so much about this book and how it's been such a motivating factor for you, right? So I just want you to, I just found this quote very impressive and something that I want to know more about. So can you explain this as well?
Yes. So Paramahansa Yogananda says that when you refuse to accept failure, that means there will be failures coming in whatever you pursue. There will be a, you know, 1,000 times you will be failing. Yes. Historically, if you pick up anything, any invention, any great thing that has happened in the mankind, so the organization or the person who did that, they had experienced failures. So when you refuse to accept that failure and persist, then the object of your desire will materialize. So exactly, just to kind of extrapolate that into the statement that, you know, the season of failure, that means when you fail, then why you fail? Because there, let's say 100 steps that you need to do be successful, you might have missed some of the steps, yes, some of the points. When you feel that, when you fix that, then you'll be successful. So season of failures are, that makes you very humble at the same time. And so there are a lot of prenatal tendencies, prenatal habits, and some habits and some behavior that pick up from your atmosphere, and you do that in this lifetime. So everything in toto makes your personality. And when you get inspired by somebody like, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda, or a lot of people, they have got their different inspirations. Steve Jobs, just for your audience, I would like to say that Steve Jobs found this book when he was 19. And yes, and when he, when there was, you know, a lot of clouding was there in his mind, he found this book in Nainital, close to Nainital, Kanchidham. He went to see Neem Karoli Baba in 1974. And he reread this book every year till the last year of his life, I mean, last day of his life. 40 times he has read this book, he has quoted, and he said that, I found four things from this book. So he said, I found passion, focus, simplicity, and intuition. So that
I think those are things that meditation also gives you, because my grandmother, especially, she's into meditation and chanting, and I've definitely seen that in her as well. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying right now.
Yes, so when you fail, if you have got some inspiration, then you become more resolute to do that, not to accept failure, and do it.
It just pushes you harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you had also spoken about AIIMS New Delhi, and how was that journey, and what did you learn from AIIMS New Delhi that made you so successful today? You know, with starting Eugenics as such a large company.
Yes, yes. So AIIMS, you know that is the best medical school in India.
Yeah.
And the best of the brain should be filtered there, to be gathered there. And when your colleagues, your teachers, and you know, everybody will be best amongst their batches, all over. So your company, he says again, your company is more powerful than your willpower. So when you are surrounded by kind of, you know, so many brains, so definitely your thought process, your working standards also elevated.
You want to be where they are, and you want to push yourself even more. Yeah.
Yes. So for that reason, always try to choose your company. Be very sure amongst whom you are kind of, you know, hanging out. So the teachers in AIIMS, they all are, the dermatology teachers, they all are like, you know, they were masters in some of the subsets of the field, and they were one of the best in the whole planet on those subsets. And each had some kind of characteristic of, they were, how you'll become best in your line when, if you don't have some kind of discipline, hard work, focus, efficiency, you must have practicing some kind of spiritual methods. And so only you will become successful or recognized. Recognition is a byproduct.
Yeah. It's like practice makes perfect.
Yes. So I learned so many stuff from my teachers and from my colleagues, senior, junior. Dr. Arika was my colleague. So she had a lot of great traits that I never had. So you get to watch, get to see what are the great faculties, you know, they have, and you learn from them. And we all, if you are smart, then you will learn from others, and you learn from others' mistakes.
Definitely.
So that had helped me, and moreover, you know, the whole in AIIMS, what happens is there is a great blend of practical and theory. Great blend. Like, you have to read the theory part. Theory part is not much. Unlike a lot of medical schools, theory is as much as which is needed, which will be very, which is applicable.
Yeah, and then there's the only the implementation part of it. Yeah.
Implementation part. Discipline. The AIIMS taught me what is called, how to stick to methods and how to kind of, discipline in pursuing the methods. That was like, that is lacking big time throughout the country. Like, if you just go to any mediocre place, then you lack those kind of things. So the discipline in, the methodology and pursuing that and sticking to that, I think that was the game changer for me. I have read a lot of stuff. I read, of course, Paraman Chaganna's teachings are very, they make you think very efficient, but I saw that in AIIMS. If not all, but most of the systems in AIIMS are very, very efficient. The best in the country. So, and that got, gone into my system. Mine and, of course, Dr. Arika's. And when we went out to do the things, our own, then the efficient system, the intelligence translated into efficiency by discipline.
Yeah.
So whatever, I think there must be much more intelligent people in medical line, much more than us. But getting that translated into fruition through methodology and efficiency, and that we're carrying. When we came out of AIIMS, we're carrying that into our medical practice, and we're holding into that. And AIIMS teaches you science, ethics, primarily, and of course, like AIIMS medical, government medical schools, if they don't teach you the commerce part, the commerce is a byproduct. And that is the spiritual way also. You should do your work best, you should be very, very serviceful, you should address the needs of the society, and the return, you will make money for yourself. And that is the spiritual way of making money.
Definitely, I think when you talk about discipline, it's not only in the medical field, it's anyone needs discipline to be successful, let it be athletes, students, businessmen, anyone. So that was really something I could relate to. And also the fact that you, all the teachings that you brought from AIIMS, New Delhi, now into your business is basically paying off. And that's something that all of us should actually keep in mind, that discipline is a key factor and you should carry on what you learn and what your teachings are.
True. True. So, Paraman Chakananda says, when others waste their time, you be lost in God. So when others waste their time, you be lost in God. So you'll be screened out of thousands and millions to get into AIIMS. Similarly, whether it is meditation or whether anything. So when other people were, just since you are a young child, I'll have to tell you that, once you pick up something and you have to merge yourself there, you have to marry that, and you have to, once you have believed that is, I have to do, then that should be your entertainment also.
So this is also like manifestation, do you think, of, believing and believing to achieve?
Yes, 100%. So people say your passion should become a profession.
Yeah.
And profession is the opportunity to serve your fellow human beings. And when you do a dutiful service, that means you're serving somebody, but it is a duty. As a part of your profession you're doing, but very, very serviceful. You're doing that as if you're treating your own family member, your own relative. So that is called service. And when you do dutiful service to somebody, so you'll get joy of kind of...
The satisfaction of, exactly.
Yes, that joy, the joy is a kind of a very early manifestation of God in your life. So you can get that kind of joy of God, joy of love, by your work.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
What Paraman Chaganna says, that make passion your profession.
Yeah.
So when you do that, then automatically coming to discipline, so it is not that you are kind of traumatizing yourself to be disciplined. You should enjoy that. You should mirth that. It should be a play to you. It should be, when you get into whatever you do, you should be energized by that.
Mm.
You should not be tired by doing something.
Yeah. So you had also spoken about... Sorry, continue.
No, go ahead, please. Yeah.
You had also spoken about the DHT technique, correct? I just wanted to know a bit more about that, if you could elaborate on what it is and how it works.
So DHT is direct hair transplantation, which is a efficient method of doing it in a very common sense that any living tissue which leaves your body should be getting back into your body as soon as possible so that it is not getting challenged by desiccation, infection, mechanical handling or any kind of trauma or infection. If it is outside the body hanging in the air or outside anywhere, wherever it is, so all those challenges will be there. So if he's kind of taken, let's say what we do in hair transplant, we take hair from the back and move that to the front where it is lacking. So if it is taken and planted as soon as possible into the home, what is the home of the hair follicle? That is the skin, that human body. It has to go, leave and come as soon as possible. Just imagine a plant that you have plucked from one area and putting it somewhere else, it has to be moved very fast. The transit time has to be as less as possible. So DHT method is that. So where we the grafts leave the body and enter into the body as soon as possible. And with that you minimize all the chances of damage. And out of 100 hair which are moving from one area to another area, so we started growing close to 99, 98 like that. From earlier it was, you know, in the best of the hands, 85, 90.
That's
impressive. That improved dramatically. And I now all over the world, as I said, this is a common sense. All over the world, every doctor is trying to implement this, and you know all the great hair transfer results are happening all over the world is one because of the manifestation of this everywhere. And we publish that so that every doctor can use this, the whole theory. And we also wrote in the book, so we are given to the whole world. And Dr. Arika in 2012, she decided that we should publish this so that the whole mankind gets the benefit of whatever we got from God as intuitive knowledge.
Like the satisfaction of the duty that you were talking about earlier.
Yes. So, as a responsibility for others.
So, I also, you just brought up the book, which was my next point of discussion, was the book that you co-authored called Step by Step Hair Transformation, correct? So can you give us a glimpse into the key insights and what the key pointers that were in the book?
So as I said, since 2010 we started doing hair, and we were one point pointed in doing only hair since 2012. So kind of all those knowledge that we have gathered in the whole process of since 2010 onwards, I just wanted to put down in a booklet so that all the forthcoming doctors, the neophyte doctors, as well as you know doctors who have been doing this, and also for the patients, in a very simplified manner, so that they all can know that you know how to go through it, so that they should not be doing the mistake that we have done. And a lot of our well-wishers, they were saying that don't write a book, otherwise you'll be giving away all your secrets of success to others. But that was, you know, that did not hold us then, held us then. And one quote of Saraswati ji was there with me always since my college days, that apurva kopi kosayam tava vidyate bharati vayata vriddhi mayati chaya mayati sanchayat. That means the bhandar or the, you know, treasure of Saraswati Maya is apurva. More you give, it will increase. If you hold that to yourself, then that will decrease. So that was there with me. That and then I always wanted that even if I don't do a surgery in somebody's head, wherever he is, let's say a patient is in Africa, some other patient is in China, and some other doctor is doing. And if the doctor is not updated, if he is not the best in terms of knowledge, then he will not do the
complications.
Best job.
Yeah.
So by this book, I wanted to give away all those things that we have kind of, you know, perceived and we have practiced. So that book, step by step, means like you can, you know, if you go through it, any doctor would go through it, then he would know that what are the nuances. It's very simple, not very hard hitting, very simple. It is more pictorial, and if you see the pictures, you can understand. And also, we have made a very simplified version for the patients also. Any patient who would see that book, by going through the pictures, you will have basic knowledge to take a very informed and a conscious decision for himself.
So it's basically a guide for them.
A guide, and a very scientific guide, and in a very pictorial guide.
Exactly. So anyone can read it and understand what it is.
Anyone can read it, and it is like, you know, the pictures are there. You have to, there's some description below, and you can flip the pages, and some 260 odd pages. We are going for the second edition now, and it is very, very easy. Doctors from all over the world, they use it as one of their main books when they start. And also this book had commentaries from at least 20 international doctors. Like, you know, each chapter has been commented by different doctors who are masters of those chapters. Let's say hairline.
Oh, that's great.
Let's say donor management. Let's say a crown. So one of the doctors who is very good in that is a friend of mine. I have asked the doctor, and the doctor has written a commentary. That means he has given his own points or her own points, including his or her pictures. So in that way, the book has become more contentful. And
exactly.
With a forward note by one of the modern hair transplant fathers, Robert True from New York, and of course, like the two of the inventors of FUE, the follicular extraction or excision. So they have also written commentaries for the book. So
when's the second edition coming?
So it is nearly ready. So we are just kind of updating the pictures. Potentially next 2-3 months it should be out.
Oh, that's great. So I also wanted to ask you about the few challenges. You know, I'm sure over 15,000 surgeries you've supervised, and that's a very impressive number, firstly. Can you tell me some of the serious challenges you've encountered and how you overcame them?
As I said, like, the motivation for us was always there.
Yeah.
For us, me and Dr. Arika. The challenges was to train the team and keep them motivated, and keep them going and keep their attention away from the finances or away from the commercial part.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to do the science perfectly, and you know, doing yourself and getting it done by people, leading the team, training them, and so that, you know, they are attuned to the philosophy of science and ethics. So, and so many people, their upbringings are different, their egos are different, their aspirations are different. Aligning them, attuning them to the philosophy of Paramahansa Yogananda's philosophy, that is, service should be the main goal of a business, not money making alone. And you should crown your ambition with the ideal of service.
Yeah.
And then only you can spiritualize a business. So attuning and aligning everybody to that is the main challenge. And while, you know, kind of getting them aligned and then scaling it up. And I think most of the organizations all over the world, they would have this when they kind of, you know, scale up, go from one orbit to second orbit, keeping the philosophy intact without diluting it. That is the main challenge. And the technology proper, like in our case, training a medical person, like with a doctor, nurse or technician, is not a big deal. But asking them to sticking to those philosophy, and so also there are not a lot of support staff. Our more than 60% people are support staff. They are not medical staff. So kind of everybody getting into the serviceful philosophy and sticking to that is the challenge. And I, being a doctor myself, I'm not a hospitality guy, or I'm not something else. I do work myself as a doctor, primarily me and Dr. Arika.
Yeah.
So that was our challenge, and that is continuing. And we are trying to innovate different methods, taking help from different professionals. I've got a few mentors who have been very, very successful businessmen in their own lines in India and outside.
Guidance is important too.
Yeah, Paramahansa Yogananda says that when you should, you know, take guidance, soul guidance from God in meditation. But when you are in the world, mix with successful men and organizations and pick up points from them and use that in your own system.
Definitely.
So that is, I think, our challenges are these. And not all the patients should be happy. All your we call patients, but you know, some people call customers, they will be happy. Their expectations would be different, and situations would be different, you know. So then how you have to kind of tell them from the very big before they go for the procedure, and ensure that everybody in the team, whether doctors or anybody, they all know that when somebody is unhappy for whatever reason, then how to give him the best acceptable, palatable answer, scientific answer, without it should be very graceful, it should be scientific, it should be honest.
Yeah.
And you know, treat him ultimately why he has come for happiness, and try to give him happiness, and not to leave anybody out from the sphere of happiness. Get him back, do whatever humanly possible, and try to make him happy.
Yeah.
So we never think of getting new patients primarily. We focus on, you know, kind of servicing our old patients.
So it's about retaining the old ones rather than going after new ones constantly.
Yes, like we are not trying to retain them. We are trying to give them service. Like, you know, all these 15,000 patients, if they're happy with our services.
Satisfaction is key.
If they're happy, if they're satisfied, then definitely they are going to refer new people, and we have been busy in last 15 years because of their references.
That's great.
So the challenge is kind of very it is kind of, we are challenging ourselves on a daily basis.
So also you were honored with the Pride of Odisha Award in 2017, right? And firstly, congratulations for that. Can you explain how you felt at that moment and how it's played out in your journey and career right now? Has that definitely, I'm sure it must have motivated you to achieve more and, you know, strive for better. But I want to know from you how it felt.
Yeah, so of course I was born in Odisha, and people back in Odisha, they never knew that we are doing all these things. And when they got to know that we are doing so many work here, and they wanted to recognize this, and I was very, very hesitant because I don't have time to go to, you know, places to receive that award. And but they all did persist that, no, you have to come. And so it was in, you know, here in Delhi, and I went there, and I felt nice that people are recognizing it. And even though I was not knowing that this kind of awards, they do exist, and we don't want, like, I feel nice that they are trying to recognize me. Kind of the news went all over Odisha, then all the Odia diaspora that is here, so they all came to know about that. They started contacting me for, you know, how I can stimulate in, you know, or stimulate a lot of other Odia doctors, Odia people all over. So that was good. But I don't think I have got a capacity now to go in a big way to do that kind of public motivation or something like that. But definitely I felt nice back then. And the true award that I seek is joy of God, joy of love. That is the true award that I'm seeking. When our patients, they're happy. When they write something back, and when they come, and with us, you know, that is the real award that I am seeking in Delhi, and that energizes us, that gives us the kick to do more and more and more.
Yeah, that's, I think I completely agree with you, that, you know, because you've been always talking about how these teachings are like a source of motivation for you, and how you're pushed beyond your boundaries to do better because of this. So I'd also like to ask you about, in Turkey, hair transplants are known and very famous. So can you tell me a bit more about that, and what the procedure is and the costs as well?
Turkey is very famous. So I have got a lot of friends in Turkey who do hair transplant, and who have got these hair transplant institutions over there. Turkey is kind of geographically very, you know, strategically positioned close to Europe, close to Gulf, Central Asia, and 8 hours, 9 hours from USA. So, versus India, which is far away.
Yeah.
You know, in compared to Turkey. Then the regulations and you know the government regulations to open a hair transplant clinic in Turkey is very, very kind of substandard. Everybody knows that, and that is known to the world. And anybody who does not have a medical degree, he can open a clinic there. So that's what was told to us. And as I said, some of my friends who have their clinic, they also say so, that you know the regulations is very kind of not that strict, and they can work in a very, very cheap price. And also I have learned that the government also does help when you get tourism to the country. So that is the extra mile the government goes for the clinics. So in that way they can operate in very low price. And geographically it is very convenient for a lot of countries. So these two factors has helped. And of course once that is so encouraging, then people went on to do kind of marketing and promotion that is never before. So the whole world started knowing about it because of the social media and other media of marketing. However, most of the Turkey clinics, you can go through reviews and you can see whether, you know, it is, there are some good clinics, there are very good doctors, but if you kind of see overall, if you have not done research, you have just gone there just because that is geographically nearby and very cheap, then there is a big chance that you will not, you will be landing in a clinic which is not manned by trained professionals, and where you will not be getting a good job and you'll be unhappy for the rest of your life. Then comes the real research. Yes, then comes the real research. Then people go for doing the right kind of research and they find clinics which are recommended by third-party platforms, patient forums, and we get maybe I would say 25 to 30% of our practice is because we are fixing the bad surgeries that happened in Turkey. So, so like all the reputed doctors all over the world, they do get patients who are being kind of previously done in Turkey. And but at the same time, there are some good doctors in Turkey too. So you have to do your research. You have to do your due diligence before you jump.
Exactly, because the regulations are so easy. And if you're saying that someone without a good medical degree can just open a clinic, that's not a very wise decision to make if you're going there. So
youngsters and a lot of people who are just in excitement, they just went for a holiday in Turkey and did the holiday and got a hair and they came back. And later on, you know, when the hairline looks like you have got it done, then that looks very catastrophic. And as I said, around 25-30% of our patients are only bad surgeries happened in Turkey that we are fixing now.
Oh, okay. So I'd also want to ask you about some latest developments that have come into the hair transplant field, and if you've got your hands on to any, if you managed to, you know, explore them and how they are, and just tell me a bit more about them.
Yes. So hair transplant is kind of course, like any other science, this science also constantly it is kind of
developing,
evolving. Yeah. And anybody who is working on it constantly, he will get new ideas, new thoughts will be ringing in his mind, and you know he'll be contributing. And of course, there is a scientific forum all over the world. We all are connected and we share our ideas in different conferences and all that. That is also happening. So the current developments are: it is more about the art, how artistic you can make it. The end goals of hair transplant are kind of making it look natural, give you a complete coverage. And complete coverage earlier was not possible because nobody could realize that they can really do a coverage from front to back. If you see, you know, recently we did Boni Kapoor. He's a movie producer. So his baldness was from front to back. So nobody could imagine that that can be covered in one go. We did that. So Azruddin, again, his baldness was too big. People thought it cannot be done. So that complete coverage is important, and making it look natural was very, very important. Like Ravi Shastri had got a procedure done earlier. Mohammed Sami, he was not getting it done earlier because he thought it would not look natural. So the naturalness, making it very impeccable, is one of the end goals. And so when you constantly work on that, when I see my own results, like, you know, patients whom I have done some, let's say like 10 years back, 8 years back, when I see them now, I feel like there are a lot of scope of improvement. That means constantly there is improvement happening in my own, whatever I have done, so also other people, they are also improving. So the end goals, as I said, the hairline should be natural, complete coverage. The density should be enough so the scalp is not visible, and they should be long lasting. The transplanted hair should last for a very long period of time. So that is also kind of, you know, every, you should try to score 100 out of 100 in every point. That is sometimes not possible. The skill, talent and passion varies very, very widely. So also the end results in hair transplants. So it is very wide, the results. You know, somebody who is neophyte just started, the results in his hands versus somebody who has done up to like 10,000, 15,000 surgeries, the results will be, you know, the gap will be that much. So there is something that is forthcoming that is, we started working on that, is stem cells. Like the hair follicles, the roots, they have got stem cells and they rejuvenate. And the hair, the hair on the backside, they have got strong stem cells. Hair on the front, they don't have strong stem cells. So if those strong stem cells can be transplanted, and we are very precise in delivering that, then potentially that can reverse baldness or may prevent baldness in the first go. That is one area I'm working on. And two more things, I'm also working on white hair. So maybe next 4 or 5 years, there'll be something that will happening on white hair also. So there are some, it is very, very slow, but surely happening. And brains in different parts of the world, they all are working, and you know, I'm working with some of my friends.
So there is progress, right?
Yes, there is. And we are primarily clinicians. We are working among, with the patients, and we are not working in the labs. Some people work in labs. So the collaboration between lab and hospital, so there is a little bit kind of in a gap. Hopefully next 2-3 years, the gap will reduce while we are working. We should also have access to labs, and my next few years would be spent on this kind of R&D, so that I'm training a big team of doctors. Already have 10 of them. I'm trying to train at least 40 of them. So once the doctors are trained, they can do whatever I have. I just want to download and, you know, ensure that they do better than me, and then I'll focus on the R&D part. I'll spend more time in the laboratory.
You mentioned Mohammad Shami and Ravi Shastri, Boni Kapoor, all these famous celebrities and cricketers. So can you tell me a bit about your experience with them? How are they, and how the process started with them, and how they came in contact with you and all of that?
Yes. So first of all these famous people, you know, these are famous people in the media or on the screen, but people, you know, anybody who has been successful in whatever he does must have been very, very disciplined from the very beginning.
Exactly.
Very beginning. So whether it is Mohammad Sami coming from, you know, Amroha, or, you know, Ravi Shastri, or Boni Kapoor coming from Meerut, so they all have got some spiritual discipline in work ethics, in punctuality, in kind of, you know, integrity. They all have something. And once you have got one great quality, then other great qualities are kind of, you know, drawn towards you. Just like a magnet, other good qualities come towards you. So anybody who has been successful, for since you are a young kid, I would like to tell you that anybody who is, whom you idolize or whom if you like, he's very successful, he must have gone through his share of discipline.
Yeah.
And once one good quality, let's say somebody speaks truth, let's say somebody is saying he is very punctual, and somebody is a very good listener. One good quality and will draw other good qualities around him, and he will become ultimately very world known, and which you call a success. I don't call that success though. To me, he is the wisest who seeks God, and he is the most successful who has found God. And God is love, that ever new, ever increasing, ever present joy is called God. And that is possible, doable, difficult, but possible through work. So, coming back to your point that, you know, anybody who is very, very kind of well-known or celebrated, is must have got some great discipline in his life. So these guys, they all came through word of mouth. They learned that we are doing a good work. They came through the friends. They have been referred by the friends. And by doing the procedure to them, I learned so many new things which were not there with me. So I picked up great points from these guys. And there's some very kind of, you know, top-notch businessmen of India, and they are also, you know, they came to us and they endorse us, they help us knowing the process and, you know, kind of evolve as a medical business. So, you know, while doing their procedures also, I picked up a lot of great points. And all those points, as I said in the beginning, that Parvan Chagamana says, when you are in the world, mix with successful men and, you know, business concerns and organizations, and from them you pick up good points and can put that in your own system.
So how is he as a person, and was he, can you tell me a bit about your encounter with him and how he was? Mohammad Shami, to be specific.
Mohammad Shami, oh my God, he's a sportsman. He's very sporty.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He would not put a lot of kind of, you know, thoughts into the nuances of procedure. Once one of his friend has introduced him to us, and of course he was balding and he was not getting time. Actually, Azharuddin had introduced me to him some 3 years back, but somehow for 3 years he was busy in playing and not getting time. And I was in London last year, July, first week, attending a wedding of a friend's son, and I got a call from Ravi Shastri. He was also there in London. He said, "Doc, you have to go to, you know, Delhi tomorrow to do, Sami's here and he has taken a break from the West Indies tour." I said, "I'm in London, I'm attending a wedding." He said, "No, you have to go, and otherwise you will not have time." Then I had to cut short from London. I was supposed to go to US. So I just kind of dropped 2 days from London. I came to India, did his procedure over 2 days and went back to USA. So he's very, very sportive, and that and he had lot of trust and tremendous kind of belief in the system, in the process. And as early as we did it was in July, August, September, October. I think October he started playing in the World Cup, and with each match it was showing that, you know, more hair was coming on his head. So it was very early, within 4 or 5 months. So much of hair is a little bit kind of a rare phenomena, but his tremendous positivity was the key for the early growth. And recently, last month again, we have met in person. He came to the opening of our Hyderabad clinic. Now you can see in the social medias all over, he's getting so many recognitions, many awards, Arjuna Award and all that. And you can see his hair. It is all covered front to back. Even though the complete growth of hair happens by 1 year, but his hairs are full now.
So, how long do these procedures usually take on average? Like right from the start of, you know, measuring the amount of space that needs to be covered till the end. So, how long does this take?
So, somebody who has got baldness, which is only the frontal part, and he wants to have, you know, get them covered, so that that is, you know, just changes his look. That takes 1 day job, 1 day, usually. And if somebody is bald from front to back, big time, then that takes 2 days, 3 days also. Sometimes you have to split it, do only 2 days, 3 days now, and again get the patient back after 7-8 months. Like in Boni Kapoor, we did 3 days job and we have nearly covered, and there is small area is left out that can be done after, you know, 7-9 months. So it all depends what is the total area to be covered. And sometimes the donor is not enough, then you have to go from you know, scalp to beard, beard to chest, depending on the availability and the comfort of the patient. And so there's a lot of factors that has to be taken into consideration before we commit how many days it would take. But usually people who come for changing the look, that is around the frontal part, that takes around 1 day, 2500 to 3000 odd grafts, and that gives the look change.
Okay, I'd also like to continue.
So if you kind of Google the picture of Rohan Gavaskar, you know, Sunil Gavaskar's Son.
Son, yeah.
So he had a, he never had a big time baldness. He had a small area, and that frontal area needed around 2000 plus grafts, and that was done in one day.
Okay.
So, and the crown was separate. The crown was separate. So that took another day. So we did 2 days, front one day, back one day.
So it depends basically on how big the portion is that needs to be covered, but it takes anywhere from 1 to 3 days, correct?
Yes, 1 to 3 days, and sometimes additional days are required after 7-8 months.
Like you said, I think about Boni Kapoor, correct?
Yes.
So also, I'd like to ask you about the potential risks that can happen, you know, either during or after the procedure. So can you just state a few pointers of what can happen?
Yes. So usually hair transplant, which is a cosmetic procedure, all over the world people do screen well before taking him into the procedure. So that means the blood test and the sensitivity to the anesthesia and blood pressure, ECG if required. So usually people do screening, and we also do multiple screening. We have a screening, four-step screening, like four screening happens 4 steps, so that there is no chance of anything, you know, complication. So it is once the he passes through the screening steps and he comes in, we have got a big qualified team to, you know, nurses, doctors, everybody. But if he's, if somebody, if the screening process is not prudent, it is not efficient in somebody's hand, then, or somebody, some, there are some clinics, some quacks, they do the procedure, they don't know what is screening. Of course, they are not qualified people. So they don't know exactly what is called reaction, what is a reaction, early reaction to a drug, or early reaction to a medicine. So then that becomes reaction to the medicine, not to the process. Hair transplantation process is not a risky process. There is, usually that does not involve a lot of bleeding or anything else. But let's say somebody has kind of ingested a tablet or medicine which is reacting, the body is throwing, then, you know, that means the medical system was not applied there. So those kind of, you know, general risks are there on anything. But the hair transplant per se, the risks are very, very low. According to me, the worst side effect of hair transplant is the hair not growing 100%. Let's say somebody has planted 100, out of the 50 are growing, 50 have not grown. So that is a failure according to me. And if somebody has not mastered that, he or she and his or her team has to, you know, they should have skill enough. So that if they're planting 100, at least they should grow more than 95. So that is, so the risk of not growing is a big risk.
So nothing medical as such, only the reactions.
Yes, the reactions. So there is a safe limit of the local anesthesia. Any qualified person knows about that and he does not cross that. But somebody is unqualified and somebody is not aware of all those things, then he could do any blunder and anything can happen. So per se, you know, the risk during the procedure pretty low in qualified hands.
That's a good success rate then.
Yes.
So also I wanted to ask you about, you know, there are a lot of people who've gone through heart procedures like angioplasty and, you know, or they have stents. So do you think it's safe for individuals who have gone through these procedures, and do you think it's medically safe for them to consider the hair transplant options?
Yes, very good question here. People who have undergone other medical procedures, including cardiac or neuro or anything, so they have to be screened very well. So, you know, they usually they have got antiplatelet medicines, like, you know, anti-clotting
blood thinners
medicines.
As well.
Blood thinners.
Exactly.
Let's say you are doing a procedure and the bleeding goes on, or the after the procedure over, the bleeding continues, then that is not, that could kind of, you know, invite some risk. So if the doctor who is qualified, intelligent, and he coordinates with the treating physician who has done the stenting and everything, and, you know, there is a clearance from him. So usually that involves kind of some modification in the treatment, maybe stoppage of the anti-platelet medications or blood thinners for a few days. But again, that has to be kind of, you know, coordinated with
coordinated the treating between physician. Both.
And if that happens, under, and in, you know, there is emergency setup to manage everything, then you can go ahead. If not, here is a cosmetic procedure. So, you know, one should not be taking any risk just for a cosmetic procedure for anything if there is some cardiac nature is involved. What we do is we take clearance not only from the cardiologist or, you know, the doctor who has treated him primarily. We also take clearance from an anesthetist. And if needed, we keep an anesthesia doctor standby during the procedure. And of course, we have got all the emergency setup ready. And with everything, and we knowing that there will be 0% chance that there will be any incident happening, then we go ahead. Otherwise, we dissuade the patient. We kind of, you know, negatively counsel him that the risks are there, even though hair would have given you a better look. But look, hair is a cosmetic procedure.
So health is more important.
Yes, so definitely. Safety and health is more important than hair alone.
Yeah. So I also wanted to touch upon the point of, you know, how a lot of people say that, you know, putting oil in your hair is going to make your hair growth better. And so can you break the ice on that and tell me more about that and if it actually is good for you or not?
Yes, air, like hair, hair oil gives a massage feeling. So when you put something on this, whether when you massage on the muscles or massage on the scalp, that massage feeling is kind of, that increases the blood supply to the scalp, blood supply to the muscle, and we feel good because there is increased blood supply to that. So other than that, hair oil, it can't give anything. It cannot stimulate the hair follicles to grow. And hair is not a nutrient to the hair follicles also.
So it doesn't improve the growth, right?
Or the... This is the biggest myth, that hair oil promotes hair growth.
Exactly.
Hair needs nutrients coming from the blood. Whatever you eat or ingest, that gets assimilated and transported and, you know, supplied at the hair root.
So and the oil is just
Thus oil is a kind of, you can say,
relaxing factor.
Relaxing factor, massaging, relaxing factor, and that's it. That's it. And oil can be sometimes bad. If you have got a dandruff, if you have a tendency to have psoriasis, or, you know, seborrheic psoriasis, something dandruff related stuff, when scales they come up from the scalp, then oil would increase that. When you put the oil, they all will settle, you will feel nice about it, that it is gone. It is not gone, that is working like a paste.
Temporary relief.
Crusts. No, the scales and the oil together, they are working as a paste. That is the medium where the dandruff will kind of proliferate. One should not, the first line in a prescription comes as no hair oil, daily shampoo. And if you are using hair oil, you have got a habit of using hair oil, then use it as a kind of, you know, massaging thing and relieving, you know, a very sensory relief to the scalp.
So is shampooing more for the just the cleansing of the scalp, or is it also some way benefiting in terms of hair growth and all of that?
No, shampoo is only cleansing agent.
Okay.
The way we clean our body with soap, and shampoo cleanses our hair, and all the dust and grit that comes on a scalp, they all get cleaned. It does not. It is not like it does not improve the hair growth. It does not affect the hair growth also. It has nothing. The shampoo, the chemicals, they don't go inside. And the shampoo which I got a kind of a neutral pH, which will not dry your hair, that can be used. Any shampoo that is available kind of, you know, in the stores that you get from, that's okay.
Okay.
There is no need to go for special shampoo.
Okay, so that's just basically the cleansing part of it. It doesn't really enter your... you know, hair strands and improve the growth of that.
Yes, it does not.
So I'd also like to ask you about how important diet is when it comes to hair fall. And, you know, do you think diet is an important aspect when it comes to hair fall? And if you have a healthier diet, does that mean that your hair will be healthier? Or if you have an unhealthy diet, does that mean you're more prone to hair fall?
So hair fall is different than baldness. Like, you know, baldness is, there is a very
So what's the difference between the both? Just clarify that for me once.
Yes. Baldness is when there is a pattern hair loss. So you must have seen males, they lose hair from here or from here or from here.
Yeah.
They don't lose hair from that usually. So that is a, there is a pattern. When you, that pattern baldness is called androgenic alopecia. That is baldness that is due to the male hormone. So it is a progressive, slow miniaturization of the thicker hair into thinner, thinner and thinner, and they will vanish. So that is called baldness under the influence of male hormone. And hair loss, when you comb, a lot of hair come in your hand, or when, you know, the comb, a lot of on the pillow, or during shampoo, a lot of hair coming, like hundreds of them are there in hand. So that is called hair fall or hair loss. So that usually affects, like, you know, kind of females primarily when there are multiple factors, multiple causes. How that happens also happens to males also, but very, very less. So just imagine somebody had COVID. Somebody had a medical incident called severe incident called COVID.
Okay.
So then what happens, there is a sudden challenge to the body. All the metabolism, everything has slowed down, and the supply to the hair also come down. So the, after 3-4 months of the COVID, maybe 2.5 months, 3 months, so a lot of hair should start falling. So that is called telogen effluvium. So they all would fall together, and after the body has stabilized, maybe 2-3 months after the hair fall started, again the hair would start coming back. They have not permanently gone. Post-pregnancy, post-major, any major illness, or let's say somebody does a very kind of very crass dieting or weight loss regimen. So then what happens? The hair falls and people are worried. They say my hair fall has immediately started. That will be always kind of, you know, corroborative of some kind of incidents 2-3 months before, prior to that.
So, that so you're saying that bad...
And that is reversible.
So you're saying bad diets can lead to hair fall, right? If you don't have a healthy diet.
Bad diet, bad lifestyle, and any kind of, you know, severe illness can affect your hair fall and can cause hair fall. So now the hair that when come in hand, multiple, more than hundreds for many days, that is called hair fall. And the baldness is a thinning, progressive thinning of hair on certain areas as a pattern, certain pattern. So that is called pattern baldness. So that is male pattern baldness, or we call androgenic alopecia. Is that clear?
Yeah, thank you. And also, do you suggest any Ayurvedic products that can be used, or any home remedies that can, that people can do at home to improve their quality of hair?
So, of course, I'm not qualified in Ayurveda to speak on that, but I do endorse Ayurveda big time. But somehow, you know, I don't have the expertise of, you know, telling about the science of Ayurveda. But anything which is yogic, one thing, anything which is balanced, anything which is kind of very natural, that is good, that is great.
Yeah.
And so, if you have a balanced diet and you're with a balanced, you know, right amount of exercises, right amount of sleep, and when everything is, and combined with meditation. Meditation means silencing your body, mind and senses and breath. When you do that, you get the energy of the soul.
Yeah.
So that is great for your health, including your hair.
Okay. And any natural remedies, you know how people say if you put certain things, like how at one point I asked you about hair oil, but if there are other things, say, for example, people I think say that if you put curd in your hair or something like that, do you think those improve hair growth?
No. The, when you develop a lot of hair fall, a lot of people have ignored the protein intake. So you have to have at least kind of, you know, 1 gram per kg per day protein going into system, whether you are vegetarian or non-vegetarian. So, so of late, in the last 3-4 years, the Dr. Arik has worked upon hair loss, like in particular in females and youngsters, you know, girls of your age, when they go for kind of, you know, bad diet style and they suddenly go for a crash dieting. So there they ignore the protein part and they do develop hair fall, and we have seen that, and it's very difficult to fix that. And she has picked up that the protein was lacking, a right amount of protein. And when you supplement the right amount, then there is a reversal of the hair. And she has done that over so many females, and she has got amazing, you know, documented results.
That's
so just keep watching your protein when you are growing. And a young boy like you, you know, you have a growing phase. Your muscles, your bones, they all need protein.
Yeah.
So you have to take extra protein for your growing needs.
Yeah.
Otherwise, both for boys and girls. Otherwise, there could be a, you know, and in kind of diet the youngsters are taking, and that has been happening for last 15, 20 years, that, you know, the junk foods, they will not have, they will not have the right kind of protein. A, B, the most importantly, they will carry a lot of oxidants, and they will be damaging your protecting stuff inside.
Yeah.
So you have to take a lot of antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin E, in your diets, and green leafy vegetables, you know, citrus fruits, juices. So that has to be also going in. I'll be always talking about which is kind of very organic and goes into the system. Anything that you apply from the top, that is not really going to affect, including your hair oil or any curd or any. Some people use, you know, eggs. Eggs could be that can work like conditioner. That can work like conditioner. You'll feel nice that, you know, there will be some glistening into the hair strands. But they are not medicines. They are not going to help you.
Yeah.
The stuff should go inside, and they should be kind of transported to the hair root by the blood.
Okay. So I'd like to do like a quick rapid fire round with you. I'll basically tell you a list of, I think, 8 to 10 things, and you just have to tell me if it's a myth or fact. So this will just, you know, help our listeners be more clear about certain, you know, myths that have been told through social media or through, you know, generations of families. So shampoo makes you lose hair loss. Shampoo makes you lose hair.
No.
Okay. You inherit hair loss.
Baldness, yes. Hair loss.
Okay. Direct sunshine is bad for your hair.
No.
Hats and caps cause baldness.
No.
Do hats and caps cause hair fall?
No.
Okay. Hair products are harmful for your hair, like those hair gels and all of that.
No.
Stress is a cause of baldness.
Stress can cause hair fall.
Hair fall.
Not
baldness. Okay.
Not baldness.
And vitamins can help you stop hair loss. I think we just spoke about that.
Yes.
Washing your hair too much can lead to hair fall.
No.
Hair dye and hair color leads to hair loss and poor hair health.
No.
And lastly, hair transplants are painful.
In right hands, they are not painful.
Okay.
In wrong hands, they can be kind of painful.
So just one last thing. I personally find advice from professionals like you extremely helpful. So do you have any advice for our listeners who are aspiring to do something in this field, or who want to get a hair transplant, or are looking to do something like this? So do you have any advice for them?
Yes. So coming to the second part, like, you know, people who want to go for a hair transplant, so they should do a lot of research, and the research should involve meeting multiple doctors and going to online patient forums. They're like very, very scientific third party patient forums where patients are there and they discuss. And there are a lot of popular Western forums are there, and European and American forums are there. So when you go there, and you should try to meet a lot of past patients in person. And let's say you have finalized some 3 clinics or 4 clinics, and you ask those clinics to give you the reference of those patients, like a lot of patients who are of your stage of baldness, quality of hair, quality of, you know, skin color, and grade of baldness, age group, something very matching, and you should have access to them, and you should talk to them in person, multiple, not one or two. Then this whole process of research usually should take at least 1 year. Don't finalize jump for a procedure within 1 year. And that, if you are doing within 1 year, there is a big chance that you will do a blunder. If you are thinking you know, some clinic is nearby or it is cheaper, it would be, you know, that is right for me. That might be the biggest mistake that of your life.
Yeah.
So those cheap, like a price and geography, should not be the first consideration. You should have adequate knowledge. And, you know, see if somebody is thinking of hair transplant, he can travel to US also. He can go to any country, not a big deal. Because you are doing on your body. This is not a commodity that you're buying and, you know, today I bought this phone, I'm not liking it, I'm going to throw it. So it is your own body. This is not renewable. It is non-renewable. So do your research, do it once, do it right. And at least do your research of 1 year. So that is for patients who are, people who are, you know, prospective patients who are thinking of doing hair transplant. Now coming to the first question, that people who would like to become professionals and enter into this line, whether doctors, nurses or technicians who would enter to, would like to enter into hair transplant. Again, the mantra for us was, do small things in extraordinary ways, be the best one in the line, and dig your well at one point. So again, Paraman Shivananda says, God has given us a body, He has given us hunger. So we have to look after it. So, but we have to, for that reason, we have to earn money. But when we are going out to make money, there should be 3 points, he says, that you should address the need of the society, do it scientifically. That means gather the requisite scientific knowledge, skills required to do it. Do it ethically. So when you do these 3 things, in the return, the point number 4 is you will make money for yourself.
Yeah.
You have to address the need of the society, then you have to gather the scientific knowledge, do it ethically, you'll make money. So once you make money, then take care of your basic needs, take care of the needs of your associates who work with you. One that has been made, continue to do R&D to improve on a daily basis, never be complacent. And never relax on your laurels. Then make more money to the work and create institutions where people can come to learn to help themselves. So, and service should be the goal of your business, of your life.
Exactly.
So when you do this, then, you know, then you are spiritualizing your ambitions or spiritualizing your business. So that would be my advice for people who like to do hair. Or anything, at least in hair transplant. So these steps, if you're kind of you're taking in your life, including hair transplant business, then there is no way that you'll be stuck from being recognized all over the world.
Yeah, I agree with you about that. Thank you so much for your time. This was really interesting. I had a lot of fun listening to you and it was very insightful for me. Thank you so much for giving me your time.
Thank you, Rohan. All the best and God bless you. And I'm sure at age of 6, what's your age now? You are 14?
I'm 16.
You're 16. You are kind of, you know, so I'm sure you have interviewed a lot of people. I'm going to subscribe your channel. I have not done that yet. I'll do that.
Thank you.
iPad.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure. And get this book if you have not got
definitely.
It yet.
Okay.
I will ask, he will gift you this, like when he's going back.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Okay, God bless you. Bye.